Today we're talking about choices. Choices are part of the way of life for each one of us, aren't they? We're constantly making choices or having choices made for us. Sometimes we make choices and then someone else changes them. I have this thing about being asked in referendums whether I want something by the government and finding that when we decide we don't, they still give it to us anyhow. Most of the churches we have in life seem quite small and inconsequential. But isn't it funny how sometimes the smallest choice can have the most consequence later on? And of course, as Christians, we know about choice more than others. Because the Christian life is a constant choice. When the Lord said, "Come follow me," he didn't make one decision, did he? Once we follow, we find the decisions just flow every day. It's interesting hearing about Serena. She had to make a choice whether to stop or keep driving, then whether to jump back in the car and go as soon as the guy started talking, or stand there, and whether to pray out loud or not. What a choice. Choices. The passage from Mark that we're looking at today is full of choices. I don't know if you noticed that. But these choices are neither small nor inconsequential. In fact, when you look at those choices, they are life-changing. In fact, they are world-changing. They are choices with eternal ramifications. Now, you all have that insert with you in your participate paper, and that is this passage. What I want you to do is do something for me now. I want you to kind of get together, if you can, with the person next to you, two or three, or a person behind you. Just get in a small group, so if you can't, just get in a group of one. That's okay. But I want you to look and see if you can work out the five major changes that are in this passage. Sorry, five major choices. You may find more, but I only want five. And as you look at that choice, I want you to see who made it. And especially, what motivated them to make that choice. There are five choices there. Have a look at them. And then I'm going to go, just give you a couple of minutes, and I'm going to start with this group, and I'm going to ask one choice from someone in that group, another choice from someone in this group, another, and so on, until I've got all my five. So have a look. Talk about it, one another. Try and work out the five choices, firstly, then what motivates each choice. That includes the choice of Jesus is one of those five choices, too. Now, as I said, I only want five. I know there's a temptation from many of you smart Alex out there to try and find extras that will fool me. I just want the predominant five at this place, please. So, let's have a look. If we can come first, if you give me your attention now to this group over here, who can give me one choice, just one person. Put your hand up. I'm sorry, old school ways, but that's best, I think. If you think you've found one, put up your hand and tell us what it is. Anyone from that group. There must be one person there. Lex has got one. Okay, and what do you think motivated their choice? Jealousy, okay. Anyone got anything to add on that? The Sanhedrin, that was the first choice. They handed him over. Motivation, anyone else got anything to add to that? Threatening their position, fear, yeah. Anyone else? Yeah, well, you shouldn't speak. Okay, that sounds very good. Good, that's enough on that one. Let's go on. Second choice from the group. Give me the second choice. Another choice. He didn't answer. So the choice we relate to Jesus chose not to answer his accusers. What motivated him? Okay, he didn't want to give them any choice. Anyone got any other motivation for that? He didn't have nothing to answer for. Yeah, okay. He knew they were trying to catch him out. Okay, good. That's great. Anyone else? He was fulfilling scripture. Very good one there. Yeah. Okay, let's move on to a third choice. Very quickly over here. Give me a third choice from this section. Anybody? Serena. Okay, and we're getting in a couple of different choices here. Pilate, really, his decision was more to crucify Jesus, wasn't it? If we go to Pilate's decision. He released Barabbas and crucified Jesus. What motivated Pilate? Fear of the crowd. Anyone else? Yeah, fear of the crowd, sort of thing. Okay, we've got, come back to this middle one. Give me another choice. I've got two that I'm thinking of. Jesus, yeah. Well, I put that one in with the other one, so I'm with Jesus one, yeah. That's a good choice, though. Okay, five different individuals, really. We've got the Sanhedrin, we've got Jesus, we've got Pilate, the crowd. What was their decision?
Crucify him.
What motivated them? The Sanhedrin motivated them. What else do you think motivated the crowd? Well, they were... Yeah, the chief priest stirred them up. Okay, so the chief priest here come into it. And one last one. They chose to flog him. They did. That was Pilate's choice. Yeah, that was another extra choice. And I'm thinking of these chief priests who chose to stir up the crowd. Why? Pilate tells us why. What was their motive?
Envy.
Envy. Okay. Basically, that's the sermon, so we can all go home. But if I tell you, you probably will, except that I would like to share something more with you about those choices. When I look at it, the first choice I signed in chronologically is, of course, the Sanhedrin, the one that you picked up on very much. Now, remember last week, we talked about the Sanhedrin. I hope you remember. The group of 71 rulers of the Jews who made the judgments for the Jewish people in Jerusalem. In chapter 15 and verse 1, if you've got it there, you read this. Very early in the morning, the chief priests with the elders, the teachers of the law, and the whole Sanhedrin reached a decision. They'd been at it all night, basically, with Jesus. They bound Jesus, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate. So resulting from the choice they came to, Jesus was bound just like a dangerous and guilty criminal. That's a statement, isn't it, when you do that with someone? And he was handed over to the hated Romans. He had already been beaten, he'd been mocked, he'd been spat upon, and he'd been accused. Now he, a Jew, was given over to the Gentiles. Now what we must realise about this choice is that it was not just the result or decision of a few individuals. Sure enough, there were a few individuals who were pushing for this choice, but in the end, it was the choice of the whole Sanhedrin, at least all those who were there that day. And many of those people were very good, meaning people. We would have liked a lot of them, I can assure you of that. So when we asked what motivated their choice, we really come down to one word, I think: expediency. In other words, they did what they felt would be the best for them and for the whole of the nation. If you look at John chapter 11, 47 to 50, I'll put it up there for you to look at. Then the chief priests and the Pharisees called a meeting of the Sanhedrin. What are we accomplishing? They asked. Here is this man performing many miraculous signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and then the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. Just exactly what Lee reminded us of. Then one of them named Caiaphas, who was high priest that year, spoke up. You know nothing at all. You do not realize that it is better for you that one man die for the people, than that the whole nation perish. John then goes on to tell us that it was God who enabled this man to so prophesy. And indeed, it was the best outcome for the whole world in the end. Yet even so, that first choice was based on expediency. As Christians, you know, sometimes we make a lot of choices on expediency, don't we? Not always the best choices either. Second choice, I reckon, belongs to Jesus. And he made several choices, as we've mentioned, through that time. But he chooses straight away how he will respond to Pilate, and also to the unjust accusations made against him. That first question of Pilate is a ripper, isn't it? Are you the king of the Jews? And Jesus straight away shows his intentions. He will respond when the truth needs to be declared. For he is the king. He can't say no different. But otherwise he remains silent against the accusation, because they're a pack of lies anyhow. Because he's choosing, as June said, to fulfill the scriptures, he's actually choosing to die. That's the decision he made. And the motivation for his choice? Pretty easy when you think about it. Obedience, isn't it? Obedience to the will of the Father. It's a follow-on from what he said in the garden when he prayed in Gethsemane. Father, not my will, but your will be done. Third choice is a very interesting one. This is the choice of the crowd. It's a choice which is instigated by a crowd who are responding to a custom. A custom which was possibly put in place by Pilate or by a previous governor of the Jews. It was a custom which they used at this feast time to try to keep the peace, if you like. By giving the Jews something, the release of a prisoner, they hoped to keep them better controlled. Now when you look at the verse itself, you read this. Now it was the custom at the feast to release a prisoner whom the people requested. A man called Barabbas was in prison with the insurrectionists who had committed murder in the uprising against the Romans, of course. The crowd came up and asked Pilate to do for them what he usually did. The interesting thing is, and what makes this so interesting, is the mention of Barabbas here. It actually suggests that this crowd knew the custom. And they were, in fact, supporters, perhaps not of Barabbas, but they were supporters of anything that was against the Romans. Barabbas wasn't a very nice man, and we know that, but even so, they supported anything that was up against the Romans. And knowing this custom, they came to Pilate with a plan, right from the beginning. The plan was to get Barabbas released, to get one of the insurrectionists released. That's why they came to him. Pilate, however, saw this as an opportunity to help Jesus, perhaps one he hadn't thought of before up to that point. So Matthew tells us that it was Pilate who gathered this crowd together and gave them the choice. Barabbas the murderer or Jesus, king of the Jews? Which one are you going to have? Well, now you can imagine that crowd thinking, well, Barabbas is not a particularly pleasant person. He hasn't done much good for us. This Jesus, from what we hear, is making a name for himself. Perhaps it would be better for us to have Jesus. Then we can really make him our king. So this is the third choice. And let me tell you, this was a choice that was made under pressure. Though their initial intention may have been to get Barabbas released when they came to Pilate, many, it would seem, were willing to consider choosing Jesus. So what happens? The chief priests. They stirred up the crowd. Why did they stir up the crowd? Because they saw there was a possibility that Jesus could be chosen. So they stirred up the crowd. They put pressure on them. They moved around them. They screamed in their ears. They reminded them of certain things. So the motivation for the crowd's choice and their cry of crucify was pressure. Pressure put on them by others. How often as Christians do we make decisions based on pressure of others? Fourth choice. Well, that's the choice the chief priest made. And their choice was to call for Jesus to be crucified. very extreme when you think of it. They didn't want him put in prison, they wanted him dead. They used their power over the crowd to demand the most horrific execution known to man at that time. They wanted him hung on a tree. Why? Because that would show him as being cursed before God. And it's Pilate who tells us what motivated their choice. Envy. Envy would destroy another man's life. Strange? Happens today, doesn't it? Final choice, however, belongs to Pilate. He was not envy-driven at all. He was pressured by the crowd. They outshout him with their cries of crucify, notice. It was also an act of expediency. It kept the peace. But the motivation that screams out of this passage at us is that of self-preservation. Looking after number one. You read the story of Pilate. You know, Pilate tried every way he could to get out of making that choice. Did you notice that in the Gospels? In Matthew, he gets a bottle of water, washes his hands, says, "It's not really my choice. The blood's not on me. Let the blood be upon you." And they cried back, "The blood be upon us and our children." But everybody knew it was still Pilate making the choice. He sent him off to Herod, hoping that Herod would make the choice for him. Herod sends him back. And then he uses this Passover amnesty custom to try to free him. Again, it backfires on him. In the end, Pilate has got to make a choice. He can't get out of it. And he chooses to self-preserve. I always look at the fact that he had Jesus flogged. It's as though he's making a statement, I think, even by the flogging. And then he handed him over to be crucified. Five choices that led directly to the crucifixion of Jesus. Choice of expediency. The choice of obedience. The pressure of the crowd. Envy. Self-preservation. Every choice, of course, was used by God to bring about the crucifixion. But when you look at that list, only one choice was motivated rightly. And that was the obedience choice. Only one choice brought great blessing, even though that blessing came after great suffering. Blessing not just for Jesus himself, but also for the world and for those who would choose him as Saviour. And yet the obedience choice was the choice of greatest pain, greatest suffering, and greatest reward. If you think about choices in your life this morning, you will find that all these pressures, all these motivations are there for us, aren't they, in our Christian walk. And the obedience one is the hardest one. And especially when we are going under in our Christian faith, that's when we need most to be obedient, and that's when we find it hardest. That's when the Lord comes alongside us so very much as the great warrior, the great king, and enables us to be obedient. That's the one we look to at that time. Now that passage from Hebrews 12, verses 2 to 3. "Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him, endured the cross, was obedient, scorning its shame, was obedient, and then sat down at the right hand of the throne of God," the place of power and authority. "Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart." Every Christian knows the feeling of weariness, because living for Jesus is challenging, isn't it? Because we do make the wrong choices sometimes. Because we do make choices which are expedient, although they're not right. We do make choices because we feel pressured. We don't want to witness because everybody would look down at us. We do make choices at times out of envy. We do make choices to preserve ourselves. What Jesus says, look to me. Look to me, I've been that way. I know how tough it is to be obedient, but I will be with you to help you be obedient. I will be there to enable you to pray openly if you have to, in the street with some stranger. I will be there when you've got to stand up and do a task that you've never done before. I will be there when the ministry is hard, but you've got to keep on going. You see, the fact is that ministry is both exciting, but it's also demanding. Discipleship is costly. Don't let anyone tell you any different. It is. Every day, I believe, the Lord places choices before us. Every day. Some big, some small. I was just thinking of that this morning, thinking of what the participator. In the participator this week, there's a whole list of ministries that are open up to people in our congregation. And they're choices. And I believe the Lord will be talking to people in their hearts and saying, what are you going to do about it? You've got to make the choice. You see, as Christians, we have been given graciously by God the liberty to choose, and even to choose wrongly. The Lord allows us to be motivated, doesn't he, by expediency, though he doesn't like it. He allows us to give in to outside pressure, though it doesn't get his work done. And he allows us to act out of envy or even self-preservation. But what he wants us to do is look to Jesus, to his example of obedience that we see here. But more than that, looking back to Hebrews, he wants us to look to the blessed position that Jesus has now. He is seated at the right hand of God. That means he's got the power to help us through. That's the big thing, isn't it? That's what we've been talking about this morning, what Don's been talking about. That we have one who's won the victory. That is the one who seats at the right hand of God. And he's promised that one day we will share in that victory with him. That's his promise. I want to encourage you this morning. In fact, I want to challenge you to take time today, some time, to think about the choices that the Lord has been setting before you. Perhaps choices that you've already made, choices you're thinking about, choices you will make. And let me encourage you to look at this list and think about it. To analyse what is actually motivating you. And then to do what Hebrews advises. To look to Jesus, to look to his example of obedience. And knowing that obedience, though that may be the toughest and probably is the toughest choice, that is the only one that will lead to great blessing. And that's the one that God will enable you to actually find the easiest choice in the end. Because his power will make it happen. That's the wonder of it, isn't it? And that's the glory. God bless you in that.